This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Thursday, the 8th of March. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Ruby Susan. Today around the world is International Women's Day, and this year's theme is Leave No Woman Behind. The focus of tonight's show is issues and stories about and for women from our diverse communities. As we look at women living with HIV, what it's like being a woman in spaces we presume are for men who have sex with men, and when should we start talking to young LGBTIQ women about the cost of fertility? Because when you're socially infertile, it can be pretty expensive. Be sure to take a moment today to think about and acknowledge the women we are surrounded by who work to make all of our lives better, and also those who can't afford the same privileges that you may have.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
The reality is that many LGBTIQ women face social infertility because making a family comes at a literal financial cost. With women already on the lower financial bracket of the workplace, the cost of starting a family for women in our communities can be a big surprise. So when do we start talking to young LGBTIQ women about preparing for a career and the cost of starting a family? Dina Curie investigates as he spoke to lesbian mother Fiona Newton about what it was like planning to be a mother when you were accessing fertility treatments.
It's funny, you don't really have an understanding of what the cost is going to be up front, I think, because it depends how many times you have to try, you know, do the insemination and go through the IVF cycle. There's lots of kind of expenses that only become apparent as you go along, and it was a bit more expensive than what we thought. It's a little bit of a funny process in that Medicare does give you rebates for some of it, but not all of it. So it's really important to understand what you can get Medicare from. And one of the things that I think is a little bit discriminatory against particularly lesbian couples wanting to go through the IVF cycle is that you have to go through two cycles of what they call insemination, which is essentially turkey basting that the doctor does, whether you like it or not. We wouldn't have chosen to do it, but it costs $5,000 to do that. And then if you do that, you're deemed, and it doesn't work, that's when you can be deemed infertile. There's a little bit more to it. You basically have to go on hormones before that, and then time your cycle appropriately, and then it's kind of done at the right time, I suppose, and with the right hormone levels in your body. So it's a little bit more science than just here's a Vegemite jar and good luck. but it's a bit annoying that we have to go through a process to prove ourselves to be infertile, yet we're a lesbian couple that is already, you know, socially infertile. So why do we have to go through that process, and why do we have to pay that money? And if you don't pay that money and then are deemed infertile, then you have to go without Medicare payments. So it's a little bit, can be damned if you do, damned if you don't.
It's a fact that motherhood has to be very, very planned for most female-bodied, same-sex attracted people. And when other means come into play to make a family, it's a potentially expensive and difficult thing to go through. Women are already at a disadvantage socially and financially within workplaces. And as an LGBTIQ woman, career planning plus family planning has mounting costs that you may not expect. Should we be teaching all young LGBTIQ women to save for family planning early? Because if you can't get knocked up by accident, it can be very freaking expensive. I spoke to Anne from Rainbow Fertility, who's a fertility specialist and gynecologist, about what kind of base costs you can expect if you have a working uterus.
someone has uterus tubes and ovaries and wants to get pregnant, then the options, and everyone has choice. That's sometimes difficult if you have to make a choice, isn't it? But, yeah, everyone has choice. So usually the younger a woman is, the more we're considering or suggesting more natural or less invasive methods because, you know, really that would be best to do first if, you know, time allowed. So, for example, if a woman is, you know, 35 is wanting to get pregnant and appears, you know, the system, reproductive system is functioning, then usually we're talking about insemination rather than jumping straight to IVF. Of course, some people want to choose to do IVF, and a lesbian couple may want to do reciprocal or interpartner IVF, where one does the stimulation to get the eggs, using a sperm donor to fertilise, create embryos, and then the other partner actually carries their child. So that would mean having to do IVF. So all of these different choices have costs. So the simplest cost and choice is insemination, and the out-of-pocket cost for doing a cycle is around $2,500 to $3,000. So it's a very expensive option, but it is actually cheaper than doing IVF. Because of this cost, some people do home insemination. We know this happens, of course. Their own choice of donor. If people choose to do this, it's obviously free, but people should be aware of, and that is obviously there is a small chance of contracting viruses or bacteria from sperm, and to try as much as possible to reduce their chance by having their donor screened regularly. And I think not choosing someone who you think might be at risk as well as the other thing. So, yeah, so the cost of doing home insemination is free. The cost of doing clinic insemination is around $2,500 to $3,000 out of pocket. The cost of doing IVF, if Medicare cannot be accessed, is around $10,000 to $11,000. If Medicare can be accessed, it's around $5,000 to $6,000. So it's all extremely expensive, I suppose, is the bottom line.
But that's if you have a working uterus. What if there are complications?
The whole plan, of course, is to get a baby as quickly as possible. It's, you know, simplest, safest and cheapest. But, yeah, say someone has symptoms suggestive of endometriosis, or they've had an ultrasound that suggests they have endometriosis, then we may well be looking at talking about treating that first, like surgery. So, yeah, it does depend on what their history is. And if someone has an issue of, you know, pelvic operations or any idea that they may have some issues with tubes, then we assess that first. You know, we look at finding out if they truly do have, you know, problems with the tubes, and that may be by tubal function test, which is an outpatient procedure, which is, you know, uncomfortable. It's not a little bit painful, where dye is pushed through the uterus and tubes to see if there's any blockages. Or it can be done asleep, which is still an operation, which is a laparoscopy to assess tubal function. So, yeah, it depends what looks like or appears that might be a heads up that there could be a gynae issue before we start a treatment, because we're obviously wanting to maximise the chance of any treatment working.
The average age of first-time mothers across Australia is 30 years old, a number that's continuing to increase year after year. But this isn't something that they're seeing with first-time mothers at Rainbow Fertility.
The average age of lesbian women accessing fertility treatment is, in my practice, is younger than heterosexual couples. And the reasons for that I don't know, but I'm guessing maybe that heterosexual couples think, okay, well, we've got time, we can try when we like later on. Whereas it's obvious for lesbian women, if, you know, they need sperm, that maybe they need to consider accessing a fertility service sooner rather than later, because it's something they, you know, have on their on the table if they're wanting to have a child, that they need time and information about what they need to do and when they want to do it. And maybe that's a good thing, that people aren't leaving it longer, because female age is always the best indicator for fertility success, meaning the younger a woman is, the more likely it is to be successful.
So when is the right time for us to be talking to LGBTIQ women about family planning so that they can start planning for the costs involved?
I think the answer is always whenever anyone's ready. So ideally in their 20s, which I know sounds young, fertility is best when a woman is aged, you know, from 20 to 30, really. So in your 20s, if possible. But we'll see anyone of any age, of course. But, yeah, it's something to think about when you're young.
I asked how prepared people were when they hear about the cost of fertility treatments.
Because I think they've already done homework before they come and see me. So when I say, oh, look, it's going to be a shock, it's going to be very expensive, this is how much it is, they don't say, oh, I'm surprised. They say, oh, yeah, that's what I thought. So I'm not certain if that means, but you'd think it probably did, that there's a lot of people out there who are all wanting to access the service that, you know, it's outside their budget, their current budget. So, yeah, I think that's probably where it stands. But people, as they come in, they've already done their homework and worked and called clinic and found out how much it's going to cost them.
So what about DIYing with a turkey baster? While not a course of action that is discouraged, Anne reminds us that you still need to make sure you're looking after yourself and your family in the best possible way.
I mean, I know that it has many advantages to do home insemination, but there are medical disadvantages of the risk in using fresh sperm. And it may not be a fertility specialist. It might be their GP, you know, their family doctor that can do their, you know, testing of their donor. So we should also, of course, include a sperm test to check there's, you know, good sperm there, that they're not spending months and months, you know, trying something that's very unlikely to work.
The reality is that many LGBTIQ women suffer from social infertility, and making a family can be a costly endeavour that's ultimately worth it but expensive. We need to make sure we're letting our younger generations know the realities and the costs of the life that they want to have so they can start planning to build the best future for themselves and their families.
I believe that everyone should have a right to have a child, and we try to find a treatment that suits them. Yes, it is very medicalised, so it's not like, it's not an intimate process that they can do at home with home insemination. So it has those disadvantages, but we try and be as respectful and helpful as we can be in a very medicalised setting. But that's for every patient, of course, not just same-sex attracted couples. So, yeah, but for everyone, I think that we know what we can offer, and we hope that we are meeting people's needs.
That was Dina Curie reporting with Anne from Rainbow Fertility.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Girls and women make up more than half of the 36.7 million people living with HIV around the world. Getting to zero isn't just about talking about PrEP. It also requires us to address everyone living with HIV. That means listening to women and girls in our community and putting them at the centre of the response. Dina Curie spoke to Abby, who is part of the new U Equals U campaign, about what it was like being a woman living with HIV and why this campaign is breaking down barriers for everyone.
U equals U means undetectable equals untransmittable. To other women out there living with HIV, the message I want to convey is that you're not alone. We're in this together. HIV doesn't discriminate. I'm Abby. I'm a woman living with HIV.
Look, I was really keen to get involved with the U equals U campaign just because it is such an important campaign. You know, I have the privilege of being an HIV positive person in this day and age where I do have access to treatment, which renders my virus untransmittable. So just the fact that I'm so lucky to have that, and being passionate about the cause and wanting to make sure everyone knows the valuable developments that have been made in the area, because it goes such a long way to tackling the stigma that so many people living with HIV have faced for so long.
Abby has been living with HIV since 2012 and added her voice to a groundbreaking new campaign that's putting a human face on the new reality of HIV prevention. U equals U, by the company of many and Dynamics International.
I'm so privileged that I don't have to worry about this, is that I can't pass on HIV to my partner. I'm on effective HIV treatment, which means my viral load is suppressed to an undetectable level, which means I can safely have sex with my partner without being worried about transmitting my HIV to him.
Look, one of the great things about the campaign is that there's guys involved who aren't positive and who are on PrEP, and I mean, that's a huge sort of, you know, it's a shift from the perspectives previously where it has been, you know, on the backs of people living with HIV to do the educating. So it's a massive step in the right direction.
The reality in Australia is that women living with HIV face greater stigma than men, because our health education and our social understanding is that HIV is a disease that affects, in the majority, men who have sex with men.
Look, there is much less visibility for women living with HIV. I think the perception is that, you know, particularly in this country as well, it is a it's a condition that affects men predominantly and men who have sex with men. But the reality of it is, internationally, there are more women living with HIV than there are men. And in this country, even though the statistics do reflect that predominant belief that there are more men living with HIV, we're still a significant community and a community that is often overlooked or forgotten.
But the U Equal U campaign really changes how we approach our sexual understanding of everyone's sexual health, levelling the playing field for all to be on equal footing instead of the HIV-positive community who have had to shepherd the burden and responsibility of this for years.
It really does break down those barriers because for so long, you know, the fear has been around people living with HIV being infectious and people being scared to be intimate. And we now have this, you know, we have scientific proof that people who are on effective treatment, who have undetectable viral loads, can have sex without transmitting the virus. So it's a massive game changer. The fact that this campaign is a reality at all is just, it's amazing.
So how do we change the narrative about the virus so we can better communicate and understand breaking down stigma and misconceptions for all, especially women who are living with HIV?
Look, I think to people who aren't living with HIV and don't have a sort of an up-to-date knowledge of what that means, the emphasis just has to be on the education, you know. The preconceived ideas and the stereotypes and the stigma that is associated with the virus are, I mean, they're wrong. They're outdated. The reality now is that people with HIV are just regular people, and people who have HIV and have access to effective treatment can live normal lives. Lifespans are just the same and can have healthy sexual relationships without any risk of actually transmitting that virus. I think it's just emphasising, you know, the facts and dispelling the myths that still really cling so tight.
Safe sex to me in 2018 is knowing your status. For me, it's being on treatment. It's regular testing and the peace of mind that you can get from that.
I think we just have to keep doing what we're doing. We have to shout it from the rooftops. You know, a campaign like You Equals You is a great way to start because it is, you know, it's out there for the public to see. But it is, like everything else in the history of AIDS and the history of HIV, it's just going to be people living with the virus really taking it on and sharing that message, screaming it from the rooftops.
U equals U means undetectable equals untransmittable.
We really need to change the way we not only communicate about HIV, but also our understanding of how living with HIV affects every person in our community. Lead Leatherman James Adensall is someone who's realised this and is using his title year to raise awareness of women living with HIV because he saw a need for further understanding and education.
Earlier on last year, I spent a weekend retreat with 12 amazing HIV-positive people and realised during that weekend that I have never met a HIV-positive woman before. Hearing the stories from these women over this weekend blew my mind in the way that everything from healthcare to seroconversion sickness, the symptoms that women get while seroconverting with HIV can be very different to one that men get. And during the lead up to the Lead Leatherman competition, it was a very clear cause that I wanted to raise awareness for and that I wanted to raise money for. I found in my own experience that peer support and having somebody there to support you through a recent HIV diagnosis is extremely important. As gay men, we are the majority shareholders on HIV in the way that we are the focus because we are the majority. And HIV positive women are not a small percentage in Australia, and yet they're not really being talked about. So this was an opportunity for me to hopefully raise some awareness and then support them doing the amazing work that they do.
So how can people support you supporting them?
Head along to Facebook, check out the Lead Leatherman page. Come along and support my fundraisers. Towards the end of the year, I'm going to be doing a fundraiser based around specifically raising awareness for women living with HIV.
That was Dina Curie speaking to Abby and James about women living with HIV. And you can find out more about the U Equals U campaign at theinstituteofmany.org.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
We live in a male-dominated culture, and in our LGBTIQ communities, cis men get the lion's share of media, attention, and spaces. But is that more about our perception, or is it reality? The bear community is all about big, hairy, gay blokes, yeah? That's our perception of that culture, but women are just as much a part of the bear movement as men. Dina Curie speaks to Iz Connell, a woman who is a big part of the Harbour City Bears, Sydney's only community group for bears, admirers and friends, who hold over 140 events each year, from weekly socials, dance parties, dinners and more.
I joined the club initially because I was looking for a place I could be myself, and the guys made it easy for me.
You can see there's all walks of life, all tall, short, skinny, fat, young, old. The Bears, we take them all in. And in Sydney, also, we actually allow women into our Bear groups, and I'm very proud of that.
My name is Iz Connell. I'm 25. I'm the first woman to be elected to the Committee of a Bear Club in Australia. I was nominated for an ACON Honour Award in 2017, and I've done past campaigns with organisations such as Don't Diss Mobility, and I'm currently an honours student in social work. I think people who go in and out of those spaces and don't go there regularly, they do a double take when they see a woman, and that's not really surprising because the advertising, it's men, the promoters, it's men. But when they start to go more regularly, they notice that I am in those spaces every week. I think it's okay to ask those questions and to ask why a woman would want to be there. So I kind of invite that curiosity in people.
Iz is a member and committee member of the Harbour City Bears, which some people may do a double take at. Isn't the bear community just for men? How does a woman fit into this mix? And why would she want to? Iz shares her story with us.
I'm the first woman to be on the bear committee, at least in Harbour City Bears and probably in all of Australia. I started going because I needed a safe space to be myself, and I'm friends with dozens of the guys that go, so it just makes a lot of sense for me to go and have fun with them. In my lifetime, in my experience, there haven't really been that many female-dominated spaces that I would call safe spaces that I could go to. And most of the events that I go to, I'm a creature of habit. I tend to go to the same events. They're all either queer-dominated events, so things like Bad Dog, Club Cookie, or they're male-dominated events, like Bear events and Leather events. But people assume that because it's an event that has a lot of men, some of the things in particularly in Sydney that look like they're men-only events or male-dominated events are actually not. And one that really comes to mind is probably Extra Dirty, which is run by a bunch of women, and it's not a men's-only space. I go to most of the Extra Dirty parties. I haven't missed one in a couple of years. And when I went to the one on Sunday night, every single time I go to the Mardi Gras one, I'm not sure whether it's because I look friendly or because I stick out, but inevitably some interstate or international guest will come up to me and say, "Why are there so many women here?" And at first it used to startle me, but now I just turn and I give the guy a bit of a hug and I say, "Why don't I introduce you to the women that run this party?" So I do understand that curiosity. It feels almost like being selected for different sports in high school, to be honest, but I think it does come from a good place most of the time. And I tend to also bring it back to the fact that people assume that I'm the first woman to be involved with Harbour City Bears, when the fact is I'm actually not. There have been people who identify as women and people who are assigned female at birth involved in this club long before I came along. People like Naomi Palmer, who's now a life member. People like Zoo, and they used to help run a lot of the coat checks and do the door for us at a lot of our events. And we've had a transgender member on our committee before. So I'm really not doing anything that's radically original. I'm just making a little bit more space for other women who feel comfortable with the boys.
But bears throw underwear parties. So how exactly does Iz fit into an underwear party?
The one question that I tend to get, which I find amusing, and I have to decline every time they offer, is the boys will inevitably say, "Why don't you take your bra off?" or "Why don't you take your top off?" Because it is underwear. Like, all the guys are in their underwear, and so am I. I often wear a jock strap. I have to be careful what I wear on top, so I usually wear either nipple pasties or a bra, because there is that risk, being a woman and having breasts, that if I take my top off, even though there are 700 topless men there, the manager could turn around to the rest of the club and say, "Tell her to put her shirt on," because of the law. I just have to accept that.
I asked Iz how she felt we could make male-dominated spaces, which we presume to be men only, more inclusive for everyone.
It really depends on whether you want to make it even numbers of men or women, or whether you want to respect, say, for instance, difference with bears, you want to respect the fact that, yes, it is a male-dominated space and it needs that masculine energy. I don't see my role as being to obliterate or to diffuse that. So I tend to suggest policies, particularly at things that label themselves as men-only. If they want to make it a little bit more inclusive, they could possibly turn it into things that are, say, men and their invited guests, and do gender ratios. So, say, two men could invite along one woman. That way, even if half the guys bring along a female friend each, it's still 80% men in the group. You know, I value women's spaces and men's spaces. I think that we need to be careful around the laws in New South Wales, which is why my club don't host any events which are specifically men only, except for perhaps the nights where they all go off to the sauna and I just let them all do that, because as much as I love the hairy boys, I'm a lesbian, so I'm not joining them.
We're a diverse group as well. Like many people might not know that we have a female member on the committee. We have welcomed women on at Harbour City Bears since its inception. We have always had a number of women from the lesbian community come to our parties and enjoy themselves, and we've got every shape, size of person from fit boys to chubby guys like me.
That was Dina Keary speaking to Iz Connell from the Harbour City Bears.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTIQ communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. Happy International Women's Day. I'm Ruby Susan.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.